Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 341.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we take the term debt ceiling, we put it in a Vitamix blender, throw in some garlic and kale, and pulverize it into a gross smoothie, and then pour that entire smoothie into a toilet. Because I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I hate the stupid manufacturing loophole drama of the debt ceiling. It's like we're all drowning in a kiddie pool that we keep filling with water. Stop it, everybody. Today, we're going to have to briefly mention the debt ceiling. And we're also going to have to briefly mention the other annoying political news about Biden and his classified documents. But we'll also talk about the sudden everyone hates me feeling that you know exactly what I'm talking about, that feeling. And finally, George Santos and the joys of lying. Today, oh, folks, this panel is fully ridiculous. Just an all-time phenomenal panel. I cannot believe it. I mean, Andrew really outdid himself this time, as he does nearly every week. We are joined. Again, he's been on the show before. You've loved him on the show before. You've loved him on multiple, many a show in the past years because he's prolific. He's everywhere. He's host of the podcast Vibe Check on Stitcher. He's also co-host of the podcast Intuit on Vulture. And he is the wonderful Sam Sanders. Hey, Sam.
Hi. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, so happy you've come back.
Yes.
And I'm so excited to introduce the other panelists we have on the show. I mean, I have been a fan of hers for one gajillion years because she's just so phenomenal. She's also been on the show before, which is also crazy. You can catch her on Drop Dead Diva, the upcoming Disney Plus movie Prom Pact. And the thing I'm most excited about is she's got this 2023 North American tour launching called Live and Livid. It is the one and only Margaret Cho.
Hi.
Hey,
Hi. Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. This is really great.
Oh, my God. So, so exciting to have you. And before we launch into the show, I just want to remind people that you could support the show by going to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. For as little as $4 a month, you get extra bonus episodes of the show, which is where the wackier fun happens. So go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And now, oh, and also special thanks to everyone who came out to see my shows this last weekend. I'm so elated, and I will hopefully be coming to environs closer to you in 2023. So, stay tuned for more show dates coming up. All right, let us get into it with topic number one. Okay, first up, the fake money apocalypse known as the debt ceiling is back. And this time, the hostage takers are just, I think, more unpleasant. I should mention that the debt ceiling is money owed on expenditures that we already agreed on. It's kind of like paying your credit card debt, right? It's not like a surprise money situation. And it was never supposed to be used as a political tool to break down the government. And yet, that started in 2011 with the Tea Partiers. Remember those guys? So here's the deal. Here's where we'll start with my question to you. Is the Biden administration says that they're not going to negotiate. And in fact, that's what Obama did in 2011. But they basically played a game of chicken, and Obama won because he was just like, I'm not negotiating. This is not something we negotiated on. He was right, and it worked. Now, here we are in 2023, and the players are more unpleasant than the ones that Obama had to deal with. The situation is weirder because Kevin McCarthy could be voted out by anyone, or just there could be a call of no confidence or whatever they're calling it, by any one member of the House. So I don't know. He seems to be more hamstrung. I don't know. What do you think? How do you think this is going to play out? Do you think the Biden administration should negotiate?
I really don't understand a lot of these financial things. Like, they're always saying like, oh, Trump brought jobs back. Trump helped the economy. But that's not true either. You know, there's not been any improvement of the economy. It's gotten so much worse under Trump. And then, like, I think it's Biden really kind of like recovering the damage and recovering the shipwreck and trying to figure out what to do. But it's really, I just really think it's another weird mythical thing that the right always pushes, like this. We want financial freedom. We want all of this stuff. But it's like, really, it's not viable.
Yeah. Sam. Yeah.
Well, whenever I hear debt ceiling conversation, I remember 10 years ago, when I worked at NPR, the debt ceiling was an issue.
When you were just like a 15-year-old young man.
Yeah, maybe like more than 10 years ago, but I helped write a debt ceiling rap for Carl Castle.
Yes.
Carl Castle did a debt ceiling rap, rest
Stop
his soul.
It, that's
I think
so
the
ridiculous.
Audio was buried because it wasn't great, but I wrote the rap and coached him through rapping it. Anywho, all this to say, if you're Joe Biden, you have to play chicken. You can't negotiate with them. Like, we saw what happened when Kevin McCarthy negotiated with the hard right faction of the GOP in this speaker race. He gave away all of his power. He made shit harder. And he's made himself barely even Speaker of the House. You've already said that, like, one person could start a vote to get him out. If you negotiate with these folks, they won't do it in good faith. And they'll just do all they can to muck shit up. So if you're Joe Biden, you just sit back and hope that Marjorie Taylor Greene is as loud as possible. You want all the attention
just keep her
to be
talking.
On him.
Keep her talking. Keep her fighting with Lauren Boebert. Keep them fighting.
Yeah.
That's the Real Housewives want to see, with Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Exactly. Well, because like we're going to hit some kind of government shutdown or government stoppage this year. It's going to happen either over the debt ceiling or over just like spending bills. Like part of what Kevin McCarthy gave away to become speaker was the ability to pass omnibus spending bills. So he's basically broken up in the House, at least, spending packages into 12 different silos. That means there are 12 opportunities for the GOP in the House
to shut down the government.
Shut down the government on top of the debt ceiling argument.
Fantastic.
So if we're already going to have some kind of shutdown already because of the GOP and you're Joe Biden, all you can do is say, let's make sure it looks like it's their fault. And so if you're Joe, just shut up and watch. Just shut up and watch. That's all you can do.
But there's also people like Joe Manchin who are like, I would actually like to see the Democrats do a negotiation. And there's other moderates in the House that are like, well, actually, I think we should, maybe we should be looking at not passing a clean debt ceiling.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. Also, you never know like what a Joe Manchin or what a moderate House Democrat is saying just to say it for their local news, for their own districts. You
and
know
for
what
their
I
donors.
Mean?
And for their donors.
And for
know?
Their donors.
For ExxonMobil.
Right. Well, he's such a right. wild card, too, along with Kristen Sinema. Like, I don't know what's going to happen except for what's in their own interest. It's always in their own interest that they vote, that they make decisions, always in their own interest.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the other just little thing that I like to remind people is that U.S. Treasury debt is basically the basis of the entire global financial system.
Nice.
So this thing, even though it's like I find it deeply annoying and I like really don't ever want to talk about it. And like I was sort of dragged into this particular topic by myself kicking and screaming. I feel like we have to mention it just because it feels dumb. It feels like a joke. It feels like something that someone accidentally forgot to delete from a bill, like this thing of voting for the debt ceiling, you know? If the debt ceiling is something that could be cured by a $1 trillion coin fabrication, then this is obviously not, like, real. But it is real because if we don't appear to be operating properly, the entire global financial system would go into a frenzy, you know? So it is a thing, even though it's so dumb at the same time.
It's so dumb. Yeah. Well, and also, yeah. I just like remind myself watching this saga, which we watched over a decade ago. It's like, how do you preserve your sanity and mental health while watching this foolishness transpire? You're like, keep the government open. And I'm kind of like, let me not really pay too much attention to their like voting on the floor because they will circle the drain with this debt ceiling rhetoric for weeks, and then there'll be one day where shit really hits the fan. I want to really plug in on that day, because if you follow this shit hour by hour, you will drive yourself crazy. You'll drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to get into another really annoying story, which is Biden's documents.
It's so annoying. It's so annoying. It's like, what? No, you know what? No. You know what? I'm like, they're trying to compare something that like Trump had so many things. The documents are just one of the things against Trump. There are so many crimes that he's committed in office and out that he should be at least banned for office from. So just that now there's Mike Pence documents. I don't understand. I don't know.
Well, I know you could like, put together a list of like 25 Trump things, and then you've got this one Biden classified document thing, which, by the way, he's been cooperating fully at every step of the way. And it's like, now they're even, Margaret. Now Biden and Trump are even.
No.
Well, and then on top of it, freaking Mike Pence hops in the chat and you're like, where'd you come from, dude? He has apparently classified documents at his house, but apparently he felt a little worried about the docs himself, so asked for help from a lawyer, and the lawyer was like, get this checked out. It all points to this larger issue in the conversation around all the classified documents being in politicians' homes. A lot of experts, security experts, say that ever since the Cold War, the federal government has been classifying too many documents, and it makes it hard for various branches of the government to communicate. And it also means that a lot of stuff that shouldn't be classified is classified. And we're going to keep seeing more stuff like this until the government just kind of pumps the brakes on overclassification.
Right. It's like Madeleine Albright's grocery list from like 2010 was classified and it ended up in Biden's desk, you know, somehow. And then it's like, fuck, we've got classified documents, but it's the most meaningless list of turnips.
Yeah. I interned for the State Department in the summer of like 2007.
Ooh, intern
and I couldn't
brag.
Do anything. I was a little, no, it was literally a favor. And I had no business being in that embassy. But they let me like write stuff that was total foolishness. It was bad. It had a secret classification like the gobbledygook that I wrote had a secret classification, and it's like,
wait,
why?
Sam Sanders,
why?
Intern,
yes,
had a secret classification.
But like,
I love
everything
that.
Is classified, and you're just like, y'all right. gotta get over this. Y'all gotta get over this. In the meantime, I do hope that we at some point get camera shots of the way these politicians take their stuff home. Is it in a cardboard box? Is it in a trunk? Is it in a duffel bag? I want to know all the details.
Yeah,
where do
Trapper
they put it?
Trapper Keepers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Peachy, an old school orange peachy.
Ooh, yes. No, and it's also funny because I think, look, even when this stuff was happening with, I want to say for the record that Fake the Nation has been, and not at all impartial observer of these things, but when the Trump, I want to say that one thing we have been very fair about is we've been annoyed by any classified document scandal. Okay, so when it happened with Trump, it was annoying, and now that it's happening with Biden, it is also annoying. We're unified on it's annoying no matter what party. And I think that with the Trump thing again, like he did not cooperate. He didn't cooperate for like a year. That's why they had to do a raid. That's why there was a subpoena. I mean, that was a more of a legitimate drama. Now that said, like I think that if there was a document that was so dangerous that that it was really going to put Americans in peril. I don't know. Look, I'm making this up based on movies. I think you sort of like look at that document like standing next to the government document safe, right? And you look at it and then you have to put it back or something. Like, I don't think like some of the things that they're able to take home where it's just like, oh, sure, Donnie, like take that home and just like mull it over. We're all acting as if the former president would read, but like take it home, read it over. Yeah. You know, I feel like part of the whole classified document thing is it goes to what you're saying. They overclassified, and the stuff that ends up in people's homes, I would love to know like truly what level of fear we should have about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fully agree.
All right. Let us move on to a quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsors. And then when we come back, we will continue talking.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God, Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back, and we're ready with topic number two. All right, like, I cannot tell you how many times I've walked out of a party or a meeting or a show I'm doing, and I think to myself, oh, everybody hates me. And this turns out is a universally understood feeling, and psychologists have even weighed in on it. So today we're going to get down to the bottom of it. But my first question to both of you is, have you had this feeling?
Yes, of course. It's humanity.
Every day of my life. And you know what? It propels me to succeed.
Yes.
I like
That's
it.
That's right. That's good. Yes. I mean, it's. I think it's a human trait. Because the heartbreaking thing is that nobody's thinking about you.
I know.
That's what's the horrible, the horrible truth is that nobody notices. And that's what you learn as you get older.
Yeah.
It's that thing. Oh, like, oh, everybody hates me. And it's an avoidance tactic to stop the thought that nobody cares. And then you get past your 50s and you go, oh, actually, nobody cares, which is great freedom.
I haven't gotten there yet.
No, it's true. Mm-hmm. I remember I came out of the closet later in life. So it was like mid to late 20s. And I was like, everyone is wondering and waiting and I got to tell everybody. And then I told all my friends. They were like, cool. We knew, and they moved the fuck on. It's like nobody cares as much as you do about yourself.
Yes.
Just live your fucking
life.
Yeah.
That said, mm-hmm. I do think it's sometimes good to worry a bit too much about how you're perceived, especially if you're in a creative or public-facing arena or field. It makes you work harder to be likable. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm like never mad at it. Like it makes me hustle. It makes me hustle.
That's a productive way to look at it.
Yeah.
Here's the opposite question is, do you come out of a situation and you think, oh my God, like everybody loved me? Is that ever something that you've experienced?
When I'm hanging around a bunch of dogs, I'm like, aww. Oh, those puppies loved me. They did.
That's so sweet. That's so beautiful.
You know.
I mean, I don't think so. Like, I think that oftentimes, especially if you're like, working in media, there is that idea in the back, like somebody's not going to like this. And you're going to be faced with this sort of like weirdness of public opinion. So I think in general, like people that work in media are inherently insecure.
Yeah.
So we're always going to be looking at the possibility of flaw and error and mistake and bias and everything. So I think that's a part of it. And then some people really kind of get high off of the idea. It's a Christ complex as well, that either be loved or hated. It's like when Kanye West was doing those Sunday services and he would bring like Marilyn Manson and somebody else that's universally hated. Like, I'm not sure, Kato Kaelin. I don't know. Mm. Not that he's hated, but somebody like that is very negatively thought of. And he's positioning himself as Christ with the two thieves on the crucifixion day, you know, that kind of thing of like, I'm hated but beloved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Or interestingly, I think in that scenario, he, like someone like Kanye West probably thought he was so beloved that he could turn the reputational tides of these other people. Or like, you know, or you think of someone like Elon Musk, like does Elon Musk walk out of meetings being like, oh, everybody hates me? He probably doesn't.
No.
You know, I mean, I don't feel like someone like that. So I think you're right, Sam. I think it's better to err on the side of everybody hates you.
Well, and also like you get to this realization, especially if you've been making something in the public for long enough, you realize that no matter what you do or how you do it, somebody's going to hate it. And someone's going to hate you. And you have to just make peace with that. Like, we're actually not supposed to be liked by everybody. It is a natural state of being for someone to just dislike you just because that is how it works. That is how human nature works. And so, like, you know, wanting to be liked is fine. But understand that you'll never get everybody to like you.
No. Yeah.
And sometimes you want that enemy. That also propels you in a different way.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so we looked at a piece in Vice that talks about this phenomenon, and the psychologist weighed in about that feeling that, oh my God, everyone hates me. And they said that it often kind of tracks back, first of all, to how you were raised, if you got enough love, if you got enough affirmation as a child. But like but operationally, what tends to happen is, let's say a friend is lagging on their replies to your text messages or something, or they don't respond, or like they respond abruptly, and you read into it. Like that, I think, is something everybody understands, where you're like, look at a text and you're like, what does that mean? And you show your roommate the text, like, hey, can you read this? What do you think that means? You know, and just reading into something. The feeling, according to psychologists, often arises when people struggle to tolerate uncertainty. So if they're just like not sure what's going on, they resort to making black and white conclusions when there's no real evidence to support them. So this is like a common thing that happens where you're like, well, I don't know what this text means, but I need to give myself an answer. So my answer is they hate me. The relationship is over or whatever.
I'm at this age now where it's like when my friends don't text me back, I'm just like, I get it. You have a job and a baby.
Yeah.
And everybody's tired.
And maybe they got some dick. I think always, they got some dick. I'll give it like 20 minutes. Because, you know, they got some dick. You got to leave them be.
I think before, honestly, I think that I think the child thing makes a huge change in your life. Like before having a chat, I feel like I was pretty good about responding to text messages. But then actually when the pandemic hit, I became very bad at responding to text messages. I don't know. I mean, I think maybe there was like a work blurring. So like text messages used to just be fun. Mm-hmm. And then now half of all text messages are work. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a different stress level now.
Wait,
that
they text you for work? Keep that in my Slack.
I get a lot of work text messages. Yeah.
Let me talk to your team once we're done here, because you need to set some boundaries and I want to help. Boundaries are good.
I get a lot of work text messages. And so I think it's like ruined text messaging for me.
Yeah.
But I think I love that idea, Margaret, that you're like, maybe they got dick. Like, I feel like that's a great mantra because mm-hmm. I give myself like a 20-minute like speech about what the other person's day is like. And I'm like, oh, well, this was a really curt text message. My feelings are slightly hurt and I don't know how to feel. But they have this really intense job, or they have a parent they're taking care of, or they're in a different time zone, so it's weird. You know, I give myself like a full speech about their lives to like make it through one uncertain text, which feels like a real big waste of my time. And I need to get over it.
There's a thing that my British friends do that I find genius, and I kind of want to start doing it myself.
Mm.
They'll send text messages, and if the text has two X's at the end, XX, it means I'm done. Stop writing me. This is the end of our communication right now.
Ooh.
We're good. So it's like a way to say, don't feel pressure to write back. I said what I wanted to say. You got it. Still love you. You know, that is a good thing that I want to start to do more
like
of.
A national thing? Like that's like a, that's
I don't know if it's a national
is the
thing,
Prime
but
Minister
my British
doing
friends
that?
Do it.
Okay.
I really hope that when like Meghan and Harry left the royal family, the last text the queen sent to them ended XX.
And like a little corgi emoji.
Yes.
Oh my God. By the way, the idea that the queen text? I don't know. This is a whole, an entirely separate podcast episode is whether or not the queen texted. And also just like a little update to listeners. We talked about the Meghan and Harry doc on Netflix for like 2.5 seconds when it came out a couple months ago. I got sick one day and then I watched the entire thing. So
what's your verdict on it?
My verdict on it is the paparazzi is nuts. Like I did it. I mean, you know, that's they have a right to be annoyed because the paparazzi does seem menacing.
They're totally crazy. My thing with that documentary and the book and all of them, it's like, I have never felt more conflicted about two celebrities. On the one hand, I know they went through it. What they experienced was not right.
Yes.
On the other hand, whenever I see or hear them now, I'm just like, shut up.
Yeah,
shut up!
Totally.
Find some new trauma.
We got it.
You're in a trauma loop. You gotta move on.
Yeah, that is
they annoy me. Exactly. You know? And I hate that they annoy me because I feel for them. But yeah, right. Shut up. Stop talking. XX.
I love them, and I love that in it they use a MacBook as a coaster.
Oh, if really? Look, I missed that.
There's a part where I had to really pause. I go, she put that glass of wine on a MacBook. Like, I was like, ooh, they're really rich. I was really excited. I actually really love them. And I love the insight on the royal family. And, you know, because so much of that is closed off to us. Mm-hmm. Also, right. It made me realize that the queen's pronouns are they, them. The queen was a they, them.
Oh.
Because you would address her as the royal we.
So
so progressive queen. We love
her. She was a progressive queen. I was really excited to think about that, because that's like where we first thought of like adjusting pronouns is for royalty, which is why I think it's so appropriate to use it now for somebody who identifies as a they, them. Very cool. We are royalty.
I love that for they, thems. Like that's how they should be like, you can refer to me as they, them, like the queen.
Like the queen.
Yes.
My favorite oddity of that documentary and the whole story is just how Tyler Perry is involved. You're just like, what?
Bizarre.
He feels like a very wealthy black new millennial Forrest Gump. You know how Forrest Gump showed up in history and was like, oh, Forrest Gump is here. Forrest Gump is here. Mm-hmm. Tyler Perry is that. You're just like, why is Tyler Perry here? Doesn't matter. He's here. Tyler is here.
Yeah, no. Spoiler, Tyler Perry plays a weirdly large role in getting them into America and safety and all sorts of stuff. He has a nice house, you know.
A very nice an estate.
He has an estate. It's on grounds. There are acres. all I'm thinking about now is whether or not Tyler Perry ever feels like everybody hates him. He seems like he might.
Oh, he doesn't. Like, have you watched his shows? He doesn't care if anybody hates him.
Just to close off this segment, I have this friend, and I wonder if this resonates with either of you. I have this friend who, like, he has a version of thinking that everybody hates him, which is that he'll say something innocent, and then he'll, like, you know, you'll have lunch with him or something, he'll say something innocent, and then he goes back home and then replays a thing he said and worries that he offended you. And so, for example, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's a great guy. He's the best. But I'll just make something up. Like, he'll just be like, your dog is so cute, but I guess he sheds a lot. And then I'll be like, oh, yeah, he does. But he'll go home and he'll, like, write a 5-paragraph long email that he's like, I didn't mean to offend you about your dog shedding a lot. Like, I don't want you to think that I don't like your dog. Your dog seems like the best. Like, and he really like goes into it, and it consistently makes me laugh, because I'm like, I was not offended. You're so hilarious for thinking that I mean, it's very cute. Do you have
is it
a
cute?
Friend?
Is it cute?
That's what's offensive is that he's writing, they'll making you read the long email. You should write at the beginning, TLDR. Also, that's annoying, I find.
And it's very self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're not just going to dwell on this thing that meant nothing. You're going to have to make me dwell on this thing for a whole email. Leave me alone. X.
It's giving you think about this too much. You think about yourself too much. XX.
Yes.
I love the XX of that.
Let's do it. Yes. XX.
Girl. I think he's criticizing his own behavior constantly. Like, he's criticizing, you know, he's like analyzing his own behavior and finding fault in it all the time.
Is he seeing a therapist?
I really, you know what? I hope so. He's really the best guy. He's so sweet.
There's also probably
him.
A pill for this. Like, seriously,
Yeah. It's an overfixation. And, you know, maybe he's already dealt with it. Who knows?
Next time he emails you that. Yeah,
it is a little OCD.
Next time he emails you like that, just write back XX. And that's it.
Perfect.
And
that's all you have
to
do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I usually keep it short, like, hey, I never even thought about this. You're the best. Love you. Goodbye. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine.
Or even the thumbs up, on iPhone, like a ding.
Right. And by the way, we did a segment like a few months ago that apparently some people think the thumbs up emoji, text return, whatever, is offensive.
Why?
Because it's like, yeah, because I think it's like curt and like shutting down the conversation, oh, which no. I was like, I thought it was like wrapping, beautifully wrapping up the conversation.
There's a whole class of people, including myself, that are reluctant to use periods in text messages.
Wow.
Ooh. Feels very just, wow. I use a bunch of exclamation points or just like line breaks.
I never use a period.
Right?
Unless I'm actually spelling out the word period.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let me know. Do you ever experience the sudden feeling that everybody hates you, and have you learned to deal with it? Hit me up on all of the social media that also gives us anxiety. Now, let us move on to the next topic. The George Santos lies keep trickling out, and they are hilarious. He said he never did drag, but like he totally did. He said he was mugged on Fifth Avenue. There's no record of it. He said his mom was at 9/11, but apparently she was out of the country. We know he lied about where he went to school, about his ethnicity, about his work history, basically all of the main highlights of life this dude has lied about. And we're going to go into the concept of lying and the zing it might give to some people. But before we do that, what do you think should happen with George Santos? Because I tell you, he does not seem to be stepping down.
No, and it's really, I'm so sick of him. It's giving Baron von Munchausen. It's really, I'm having a huge problem with like how much attention is being put on him. I mean, just to make fun of him, but the fact is he's not going away, and none of these these lies somehow disqualify him for office, which they should. They should have immediately. It's really not cool.
Yeah, I think we're going to be hearing from this man for the next 10 years, whatever happens.
Yeah,
he likes the spotlight. He knows how to get attention. McCarthy is not going to kick him out unless shit gets really worse. So I figure he'll serve out at least half of his term, and then he'll be doing stuff to stay in our mind's eye. He'll be on a reality show. He'll be
pundit
on Fox News.
Yeah, he's on all that shit. He's one of those.
He's never going to leave us. You know, it's like when you see how he reacts to this stuff, he wants it.
He loves it.
There's all these questions about him being a drag queen. Then he gets into an argument on Twitter with the drag queen, which makes me say, you a drag queen.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You know?
That's right.
But he wants it, you know? He wants it. And I must say, it's not even my guilty pleasure. It's just my pleasure watching that train wreck. I'm like, you know what? If Marjorie can be up in the House of Representatives, this dude can too. Let me just laugh and watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because some people are like, well, it looks like he'll just do 2 years and it won't really be very harmful, or, you know, he doesn't have very much power ultimately. So maybe he'll just do these 2 years and then he won't be voted back in. And then that'll be the end of that.
He could be voted back in. Well,
they could vote him back in. I don't think that would happen because I do think that enough reasonable voters would turn out and be like, we are not putting up with this. But I will say, just in terms of like the notion that a sitting member of Congress can't do very much harm, I think we always think of Congress as like these people that go and vote on really large policy measures, like on healthcare, and they're just voting on these big things. But the other thing, also a former intern on Capitol Hill, thank you very much. The other thing that happens with Congress people is that they're constantly fielding inquiries for help from citizens in their district. And so, you know,
Constituent services.
I mean, that was one of the things when I was an intern for Charlie Rangel. Thanks very much. I used to
love that man.
I mean,
oh my God, he had that little gravelly voice.
Absolutely love that man.
Mr. Rangel. Anyways, go ahead, sorry.
He would, so I would read a lot of the letters that came in, and people just needed help. They needed help, you know, with a visa for their cousin. They needed help with like a zoning issue. They needed help with something. I mean, it was just like people need help. And so I am just curious to know if that office is like functioning in any way. You know what I mean?
Well,
with this
if
dude
history is any guide with George Santos, probably not. One, he's probably not getting good staffers because the good staffers
right.
Don't
Who's
going to
work for him? Yeah.
And two, his grift shows that he would mess up a thing like constituent services. You'll recall the story about him having some charity that helped like rescue dogs, but apparently he killed some dogs. Like this dude is just like
and like
not
pocketed
do anything,
the money.
Right?
You know, there's so that dishonesty. I mean, now it's like news if he did tell the truth.
Exactly. So he might be doing the thing where he writes back to all of his constituents' emails, but is just doing nothing. Mm-hmm. That might be going on.
Right, exactly. So exactly. So then you're sort of stuck without having that avenue for help.
Call your senator.
Call your local state assembly person. You know, there's other places you could call. But okay, so we talked about George Santos. He did these sort of really big, crazy, consequential lies. But there's a world of white lies, of fibbing, of play acting, that can kind of be fun. We read a piece about it in Vice that talked about this kind of like fibbing. Do you have fun with this kind of line? Because let me tell you, I once ordered a cup of coffee with a British accent to see if I could pull it off. And I truly almost had a panic attack. Like I couldn't handle, even though it was like nobody was hurt in the process of me doing a British accent. You know, I just couldn't handle it. So what is your relationship with that kind of fun fibbing?
I do the best kind of Southern California lying, which is me and friends or whoever will go to open houses and act like we're a married couple about to buy.
It's so much fun.
Okay. That's cute.
With women, you show up and they're like, yeah, we're just looking for a place for the kids and the dog. And then you get treated like a king for half an hour and then you go away. That is the best kind of lie. Lying
that's
at
really
open
cute.
Houses.
Yeah. That's really, really cute.
Margaret?
I don't know. Like, I think my capacity for lying has really shifted as I got older because I can't remember any lies I told. So I'm really careful to tell the truth because I just cannot remember. The biggest lie that I told was when I was like 17 and I lied my way into a college comedy competition. I had dropped out of school.
Ooh.
And I won the West Coast. So it was... the prize was to open for Jerry Seinfeld. And I got to open for Jerry Seinfeld, which helped me along to find it to space to have a television career. And that was really incredible. And then years later, I met with the people who put on the contest and I told them that I lied. And they're like, so? They didn't care. They're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, had it been needling at you for
years?
Yeah,
I was like scared. I was like super scared that I was going to get found out and something was going to happen. And then so when I finally saw the promoters that did it again, I immediately came clean and they were nonplussed. Okay. They had no reaction.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the kind of lie that, yeah, I would just have faint like from doing like a lie like that. I have a really hard time. I mean, I think part of it. So it's funny when you said, Sam, when you said Southern California lie, I'm from Southern California. I'm from Palm Springs. And a bunch of my friends.
I didn't
friends,
know that. Palm
yes,
Springs.
Yes,
I never
yes,
meet
Palm
anyone
Springs
from
native.
Palm Springs.
That's there. I'm the one person.
Okay.
And a bunch of my friends from Southern California like lived in New York. We all lived in New York City for a while. So half of our friend group was, you know, Northeastern natives. And then the other half was Southern California natives. And the Southern California ones would always be like, oh my God, I'm totally going to be there in 10 minutes. But like, it was always 20 minutes, you know, we were always like lying really at small amounts about logistical things, just constant lying about logistical things. And they were like, why do you guys do that so much? And I was like, is it the traffic that did it to us? It's something about the driving, the parking. I don't know. But we always were doing that kind of.
It's the weather. It's the weather. When the weather's this good, you lose all sense of time.
Right.
It's sunny most days.
Agree. Yeah.
My favorite kind of like lie in Southern California is like the myth of California sober. Everyone's into that now. I'm California sober. Okay, you're not drinking alcohol, but you're doing cocaine, ketamine, mushrooms, LSD. Molly, you're not sober, buddy. You're just doing different drugs.
Yeah. I love that. So in this article, they talked about the sort of like trust breaking down. And I have a friend, a Southern California friend, who does small lies all the time, but they're like, they're just the dumbest. It'll be like, what'd you have for lunch? And I'll be like, a hot dog. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like, you had a hot dog, but he had a salad. You know what I mean? And like, that's the lie. Like, it's so.
Is he doing it for comedy or just?
Yeah. He's just sort of like. like doing it to see what we'll say or something. I don't know. It's just kind of like a funny thing. But
I'm worried about your friends.
No, I know. You're
the more you say about your friends, they're trouble.
Like, I know.
That's a strange thing to lie about, though. Like, why would you lie about having a hot dog?
Yeah, no, it'll just be, I don't know. I can't explain it. He'll just kind of do these like funny lies to see what we'll say or whatever. I don't know. And we're sort of used to it, you know. But then when it comes to the time when he's trying to tell us something serious, I need to get confirmation like 100 times before I believe him. So I think all.
Do you like being his friend?
Yeah, no, I do.
Does he ever cry wolf anytime?
Yeah. I guess it has frayed, you know, my general trust in, you know, it's like we have
in
fun.
Him as an individual.
Right. And when it comes to serious things, like, sure, we can like hang out and like talk Real Housewives. Like, that's not a problem.
Just
but
mouth his name silently. Don't say it out loud.
It turns out it's like an A-list celebrity we all know. But I know it's just like it does erode trust. And so I wonder, like, if you guys have ever dealt with someone who kind of does a lot of this sort of like little lying that you feel like, they're not, I can't trust them ultimately.
I feel like in romantic partnership, you have to lie. Your partner always looks good no matter what.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
They can eat whatever they want and do whatever they want, and sure, it's fine. No, you don't snore. No, it's fine. Like these are compromises you make. Some of those times it's just fine, right?
Yeah.
I think that is like negotiating space with somebody else that's really intimate, and then you kind of know what serves them and their safety.
Right.
You know, that I don't even count that as lying. That to me is more just like graciousness, which I think it's just being nice, I think.
Yeah.
There was one girl who I was friends with, we were going to go do something, and then she said she was sick. We were like texting about it, and I was like, okay. And then later we were talking about the event, and I was like, oh, yeah, you were sick. And she goes, oh, no, I lied about that. And I was like, I'm not going to be friends with you. That's weird. Like, it's weird to just sort of like kind of, I mean, it's not even a consequential lie, but I was so kind of grossed out by like, because I really do, I love a boundary. And I'm like, you know, if there's something I don't want to do, I go, oh, I don't want to do that.
There you go.
Instead of making a weird excuse.
Margaret, I would say that's unusual. People don't normally admit to just not wanting to do something. I think it's far more likely that someone will be like, I'm not feeling well. You know what I mean?
A close friend of mine does this thing where for most social plans, they'll just say, let me see how I feel. Then the day of, they'll say, I feel like going out today, or I don't. And you're like, you know what? I respect that.
That's great.
Every day your emotional state can be different, and it's okay to say, let me see, right? So also,
but
we're all adults. That's fine.
This friend you can never reliably count on this friend days in advance to agree to do something.
Yeah.
Okay. So you
but
don't
they're in
rely
that box,
on that
and
person
I know.
For that type, right? So you know. Yeah. See, I have a friend who I knew that if we ever made plans, there was a 50% chance she would cancel. And over time, that didn't end up working out. You know what I mean? Because it was just like, man, it's frustrating that I can't count on you to like just show up to a thing you agreed to do. So over time, I was just like, I'm going to like put less energy into this. It doesn't seem
and that's
to
allowed.
Be.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, you know.
You said XX.
Sorry,
I keep bringing it back. I keep bringing
it back. I
love that
because it's very useful.
Yes.
It's very, very useful.
I said to her ex Corgi, and she was confused. But okay, folks, let me know what is your relationship with the white lies? I'm so curious to know.
Also, why they got to be white?
Ooh. All right.
Can't they be like, I want them to be
your lies of color. Tell me about
it. There we go. I like that.
All right, folks, that is the end of the episode. I want to thank you both so much for coming on this show. You're both just so utterly delightful. I was so excited to see this combination of people on the panel today. I can't even tell you. And what I would love is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all of the wonderful things that you do. Margaret Cho, where do they do that?
They can find me at margaretcho.com, at margaret_cho on Instagram, at margaretcho on Twitter, and at the Margaret Cho on TikTok.
Sam Sanders, where do they do that?
So on the social platforms, I am at Sam Sanders. So at Sam Sanders on Twitter, at Sam Sanders on Instagram, and I host 2 weekly podcasts. On Wednesdays, new episodes of my podcast Vibe Check drop. And on Thursdays, new episodes of my Vulture and New York Magazine show Into It drop. They're both really fun. Check them both out. And also got to just say, Margaret, it's such an honor to be in the same podcast panel with you. I'm such a humongous fan. I love everything you do. And you just are a trailblazer in so many ways. Mad respect. XX.
Thank you. I'm such a fan of yours. Thank you. This is awesome. You.
And to everyone, please like, subscribe to Sam's, both of his shows, which are so fun and just great. And also, don't forget to see Margaret live and in person, which is how she should be seen on the Live and Livid tour, which, like, I can't wait to go to myself. So definitely support our guests. And then as for me, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. I will be on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this week. So tune in to Wait, Wait to hear me there. And otherwise, I would love to thank all the people that make this show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire, our fantastic audio engineer, Stephanie Aguilar. Our theme music was written by Gabi Alter. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. And please don't forget to email us. You've been doing great at using the new email, fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com for any ideas you have, for topics, for guests, for whatever idea you have. I'm all ears. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.